Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. Being healthy and well is at the forefront of our minds, especially during this COVID era. So I'm delighted to say that for this season, I've teamed up with an Irish company that I really believe in. Taking Revive Active is one of the ways you can support your immune system this winter. The award-winning super supplement contains 26 active ingredients, including vitamin C, D and zinc, all in one handy daily sachet. And to celebrate our partnership, they're offering a 10% discount on all Revive Active products. Simply go to their website, you'll find the link in the show notes, and use the code SHEILA10. This week, my guest on the podcast is the phenomenal Joanna Reardon.
There are some times where I look in the mirror, and especially when I was younger and I wanted to kick a football with the rest of my peers, and I couldn't. And I was very like, well, why is this meant for me? That kind of vibe.
Yeah, did you ask yourself those questions, the why?
A couple of times, like, you know, but then, and I don't know, maybe it's just because, like, this is the nature of sport that everything's so focused on the athlete all the time, maybe rightly so. But it took a long time for me to figure out that, okay, I have no limbs, I can't play sport, but I can play a role in sport, and I can play a role in telling people's stories.
Joanne studied criminology in UCC and is only one of seven people in the world living with a rare physical disability known as total amelia. This means she was born without all four limbs. And even though there's no medical explanation as to why this happened, Joanne, or indeed her family, has never allowed it to hold her back. She first gained attention for skipping school to confront the then Taoiseach, Enda Kenny, about his proposed plan to reduce disability funding during his election. In April 2012, she spoke before the UN. And also in 2012, she was named Young Person of the Year at the People of the Year Awards. She's an activist for people with disabilities, a motivational speaker and a sports columnist with the Irish Times. And in 2013, she appeared in the No Limbs, No Limits documentary. I've met her a good few times down through the years, and I've been lucky enough to interview her before. But in this conversation, we talk about so much. Her robust childhood, her views on things like pity and positivity, that time when current Taoiseach Micheál Martin fed her, her love of yoga and surfing, and loads more. I feel really lucky that we got to record this chat when we did, and I started by asking her about her mindset.
Probably 95% of the time I would be a bit optimistic. There are obviously 5% moments where I'm like, I absolutely hate my life. Why am I here? Like, throw me off the nearest cliff ASAP. Now, normally that's either a work thing has gone a bit astray. Like, you know yourself, working in media, things can just go so quickly for you. Otherwise, it's a sports thing. My team would have lost, you know, anything in particular. So, yeah, there are some days, I suppose, where I do feel a little bit like, God, this day sucks. But I just kind of take it as a day. So if I have like a this day sucks kind of vibe, if it's like a Saturday, I make sure that Saturday is a this day sucks kind of day. Like, I don't try and rush into a, like an air of positivity. Like, I think now I'm better at letting myself have the bad day, and I think that's more important for me rather than trying to suppress it and like putting a smile on and be like, yeah, everything's totally fine. Because I think that's like the worst thing. Like, I know, like, one of my colleagues, she's a sports psychologist, and she was saying that positivity can be actually like a toxic thing. Mm. Like, if you're kind of out there as like a really positive person, like, that's a weird burden to kind of have placed upon you without even kind of asking for it. But as I said to her, I never really feel it's a burden. I just think whenever I have my bad days, I have them privately to myself or to my friends or to my family or basically to whoever will listen. So yeah, that's kind of where I kind of go from. And then, you know, the following day, normally I wake up perfectly fine. Like, normally I wait 24 hours if anything has really irked me or annoyed me or cheesed me off or whatever. And then if I'm annoyed about it 24 hours later, I'll do something about it, because I think sometimes it's better just not to react and be accused of overreacting. I think it's good to not react, not let anyone twist your words, and then wait the following day and be like, actually, you know what? I'm really annoyed about this thing. So yeah, that's kind of how I do it. But yeah, I know other than that, like, I kind of know, you know, you're probably the same once you kind of step out or once you're on social or anything like that. You kind of have to keep that personality up that you've kept going for so long. But I think it is really good to have an outlet where you can just turn to someone and turn off the car and be like,
yeah,
God.
Yeah, yeah, big time. Oh, look, I think that's such an important message, because as you said, oftentimes we're programmed with, you know, positivity posts on Instagram or whatever they are. And there's nothing wrong with them, and there are time and a place for everything. But as you said, sometimes positivity is not actually doing somebody a favour. It's actually causing more damage, or as you said, it can become toxic. So that's a really important, I think it's really important to discuss that and get into it, because, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, you indulge in the down times. But as you said, it's important to allow yourself to be okay with it as well.
Yeah.
And give yourself time to, do you know what? I'm not doing brilliant, and I know it's not going to be a forever thing, but right now it's where I'm at.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and me and a good few buddies of mine, like, we have a really great thing where it's just like, if we know something's about me, we're like, do you want to rent or do you want advice? And we're like, no, just rent. I just want you to text back. Okay, that's all. And then we just absolutely let it out on the page, and we're like, yeah, I feel perfectly fine after. God, that's so embarrassing. Don't remind me of that ever again. But no, honestly, I think it's just all about finding whatever works for you. Like, as I always say to one of the girls, like, you'd never tell someone, geez, you're very happy, but there are people in life that are happier than you, Joanne. And you never, like, you shouldn't tell someone, geez, you're very sad, but people have a lot worse than you.
Yeah.
Like, you'd never, like, flip it on the reverse side. So I just think it's super important to let people have their bad day and let them in it. And yeah, if they want to talk about it, they'll open up. But for me, like, and I can't really stress the importance, like, I've luckily, touch wood now, I've never suffered from any mental health issues or anything like that. But the most important thing for me, and I don't know, is it just because I have no limbs and that my voice is my outlet, full stop, for everything that I do. But I just find it super important to talk about it with absolutely anyone that will listen. Mm. Not just in that moment in time, but just in general. And I think it's so handy to have that friend that you can just pick up the phone and they can say, is it a rant or is it advice? Because it could be something really small and really minor, you know, that anyone else kind of wouldn't really know anything about. Like, half my friends don't know anything, one, about having no limbs, and two, they don't know anything about media or anything like that. So normally when I rant to them, it's to a very audience who'd sit there and be like, right, and can you not just sort it by then? You're like, well, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just really important to kind of just have your outlet, no matter what it is. You know, for me, now I do yoga. I've been doing it over just over a year and a bit now. I'm not exactly standing on my head yet, which is super disappointing.
I love the way you said yet.
Yeah, I'm so positive about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think just having like that outlet for you, and that maybe, well, for me it's 20 minutes and if it's a class it's an hour, but to have an outlet where you can kind of just sit there, take a few deep breaths, stretch it out, I think is perfectly fine. I know other people do boxing and running, just like to stomp the ground and stomp it out, or beat the boxing bag. Whatever works for you, I'm all about it. Like, I have scoliosis and I had a titanium rod put into my back when I was 16 to just keep me upright. And before that rod went in, I was incredibly active. I was swimming. I was doing everything with everyone else. I would go onto the football pitch, standing goals, and do the best that I could. And then once that kind of went in, I don't know, was it like it sucked a bit of confidence or what? But I kind of found that the first time I stood up, I fell over. And I was like, no, this is not worthwhile. Like, you don't want to be falling over in front of everyone, Joanne, you big mug, you know, something along those lines. So I just kind of stopped. I just stopped being kind of physically active because I thought it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth the pain barrier. And it just really wasn't worth risking going in for another operation, because I'd ring the surgeon, oh, it slipped because I decided I want to go cliff diving or something as stupid as that. So I basically stopped. And then last year, summer is kind of a weird time when you're working sports. Like, your weekends your weekends, you don't have weekends, you kind of more have weekdays to yourself. So then I kind of decided with another girl, I was like, oh, have you ever thought about doing yoga? She's like, oh, I don't know. She's like, I'm much more active. She's like, you know, I play football. I like kind of shouldering people and running and catching and going. And I was like, oh, we'll try it because I'm kind of the same, you know. And we went in to the Himalaya Yoga Valley here in Cork. And yeah, we just met Lalit. He runs the whole place. And I remember he said to me, I was like, oh, Lalit, 6 weeks now, I want to be on my head, possibly spinning. And he was like, right. And he kind of nodded. And next thing he was like, but you know, he was like, yoga is really adaptable. He was like, it's not those pictures you see in the Western world. It was kind of funny because I was looking around his like office space and it had pictures of him doing things that you like, you put on Instagram, like no bother. He'd be like, oh yeah, I just balanced on one finger there, you know, no big deal. And I was kind of looking like, all right, Lalit, you know, whatever. But no, he just adapted it basically to whatever. Like, I don't, get me wrong, I found it at the start incredibly boring, going inhale, head to the right, exhale, inhale, center. I found that super boring. And then,
because you're a fast person,
I have to be going, like my attention span, I'm a super adrenaline junkie. And I think after 6 weeks I was like, oh yeah, I'm actually getting into this. And then I started noticing little differences, you know, whenever someone would pick me up to do different things that I need, like dress me or bring me to the toilet or shower or whatever, they'd be like, oh, Joanne, my right leg is what goes up. So they'd be like, oh, Joanne, your right leg is actually, you know, touching the toilet again, you know. Or, oh, Joanne, you know, your right arm is actually kind of getting a bit more level with your left shoulder. So just bizarre things I kind of started to notice. And then I just started to feel somewhat really good inside about myself, because I was like, I never thought in a month of Sundays when the rod was put in, I thought the rod was going to do that for me. So I kind of thought that was the end of my road. And then when it kind of didn't, maybe I just found myself in some sort of like physical, not hatred, because I don't hate my body. Like, don't get me wrong, I really like it. Like, sure, if I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh, the gut right there. Or, you know, we joke that where the rod is, we call it my hump, just like as a joke, you know, different things. And I think now it's really nice because I'm able to actually realize, well, actually, that hump doesn't necessarily have to be there if I do this pose, or, you know, that gut doesn't have to be there if I do a certain breathing technique. Because
yeah.
I remember, like, I said to Anka, like my new teacher, I was like, oh, Anka, I really want to get like a six pack again. And Anka was in stitches and she was like, you know, you can do it by breathing. You don't even have to do crunches. And I was like, incredible. Sign me up. And it's just honestly like the best thing I've ever found. And I think for me, just regulating kind of my mind and my attitude and just calming down for 20 minutes a day, I think is something maybe everyone should invest in. But it's so hard, like, you know, to actually find that spot. You really have to work hard, I think, to carve out that time.
And do you give yourself that time in a day?
I do. Like, I do my level best. So I like have an app basically on my phone, but it tracks your activity rate. And yeah, so basically you put in whether you've had low, medium or high exercise kind of rate. And yeah, if it kind of sends you a notification to say you haven't had your exercise yet. So the guilt of that alone, I'm like, fine, I'll get on the mat. Just leave me alone now for 5 minutes. But yeah, no, I really enjoy it. And I actually do feel bad when I have to tap low when I've not done a tap. Like, I actually, I'm like, oh, don't judge me, app developer, even though I know no one's reading it, you know.
It's funny, you know, I often feel that after, you know, yoga session, whatever it is, whether I'm doing like the physical postures or whether it's, you know, lying down and meditating, whatever it is, I don't think I've ever not felt better.
Yeah.
For doing it.
Yeah.
You know, feel more chilled out, just feel a little bit less up in my head. Do you feel that when it ends?
I actually feel like ready to go.
If that really makes sense. Energized.
Yeah. It's like someone has like injected me with something that's like, let's go. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
So you're even more hyper than usual.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising. Because like, I wake up, I have my breakfast, and then I go on the mat. The PA who I'd have, she normally just go away for 20 minutes. And we have it set up that when my phone dings after 20 minutes, it sends it to her phone to say I'm ready, basically, because I just close all the doors. The dog might come in every once in a while, but that's about it. But yeah, so she leaves me because she knows, like, if she's there, I'll just be like, so Gina, what are you up to? What are you going to do later? Stretch. So Gina, tell me about this.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So we know exactly like what to do. But yeah, no, I've gotten more energized and I've got more, I suppose it's more active out of the chair. Like, I could now walk across the yoga mat, shuffle across the yoga mat, no bother. I can now get on the mat, like, face down, onto the back, no bother, super easy. Whereas I haven't been able to do that since, I'd say, I was 16, yeah. So, what, 8 years?
Really?
Took to do that, yeah.
So in the last year and a half doing yoga, that's what you're saying. That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird, like, because I'm one of those people where, like, that to me, because I'm just such a, like, mentally, I think I'm mentally athletic, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the fact that I can't do that for 8 years, I'm like, what did you waste your time for? You know, you could be in the Olympics by now if you actually copped onto yourself, but not in a bad way. It's just more like, God, I wish... Do you know, someone had told me that this existed. Because I remember, like, it was physiotherapy. And physiotherapy was like, exert yourself, like, break a sweat. And there was nothing wrong with the physio. I was just too lazy to do that. Whereas if someone had told me, oh, there's this yoga thing that you can do. Mm. And it's actually really super chilled out. I think I would have done that, like, straight off the back of getting the operation. Because you don't kind of look at someone and be like, oh, yeah, sorry, I can't actually lift my head up from the mat. Like, how embarrassing is that to someone who's physically active? Whereas in yoga, it's very like, yeah, yeah, whatever you can do, because you can work on it from there.
That's right.
Like, it blew my mind.
Yeah, and it's again, I suppose, you're hitting on such important messages for each and every one of us, regardless of what we're into, whether we've never done yoga before, whether we want to try, or whether we've been doing it years. You know, if it's not yoga, it might be something else. But finding something that you accept wherever you're at. With you, I think, you know, I think anyone who's ever come across you, who's either met you in person or has read your story, as it were, has been obviously just amazed by your brilliant attitude. And I think it's a term that's always bandied about, and I wonder how you feel about it being described as inspirational.
It's so funny, we were only talking with this with a bunch of Paralympic athletes, and we all sat there and were like, oh, it's a can of worms. Like, don't get me wrong, I enjoy it, obviously. One, it strokes the ego very well, so that's not too bad. And two, look, honestly, people get inspiration from so many different places. I'm incredibly grateful that I would be a source of inspiration for some people. But as I'd always say to some people, fair enough, if I'm a source of inspiration and you go succeed and do whatever you want, that's great. But if you do what it is on the basis of a girl with no limbs can do much better than you, I think that's the wrong attitude to have. And it's the same, you know, I feel with some of the Paralympic athletes, like, they're very much applauded, as they would say, for getting a gold medal, rightly so. But the story would be, I don't know, let's pretend it's me. So it'd be like, Joanna Reardon has no limbs yet wins Olympic gold. I don't want that to be the story.
Yeah.
Like, I want Joanna Reardon wins gold for her country to be the headline. That should be the headline by right. So yeah, while I don't mind it, I think it is super important to just find, you know, to use it in such a way that you're not putting yourself down. And I think most importantly, I think we're kind of stuck in this, like, weird phase at the minute. I think it's the same with, like, maybe women as well. Like, if we see, like, women in power, we're like, God, it's inspirational. You've got kids hanging off you. You're still able to run a multi-billion-dollar industry. Show so many different things. You're so inspirational. I think that's kind of wrong in a way. I think we should be trying to remove the hurdles rather than clapping someone on the back for doing it more so than
that's
anything
so good,
else.
Yeah.
That's just honestly my opinion. And I think a lot of the time, like, a lot of expectation is placed upon individuals who are in a certain field because they are a minority of some sorts. And I think that's wrong as well. Like, I think it's just important to let them be themselves first. And I suppose everyone, look, has an onus and everyone has a platform. Sure, don't get me wrong. And it's how people want to use that platform is completely up to them, whether they want to or not. Some things are obviously bigger than others. If I saw the stuff that was happening in America to people with disabilities, of course I'd be like LeBron James and I'd be standing up and I'd be shouting from the rooftops, don't get me wrong. But I think at the same time, I think it is really important to just sit back, reflect and listen and be willing to educate yourself. And I think not place an expectation on someone to be not only a great athlete or a great broadcaster or a great whatever, and to be a great activist all at the same time. Because a lot of those things actually do take work and learning and education. Like, I don't have all the answers about whatever policy is going on in government at the minute. Like, these are things you have to sit down, reflect on, actually try and figure it out and see what other people are saying. Like, you can't just sit there and be like, yeah, yeah, I believe in education for all and that's it. Like, you have to have like a bit of a plan and a strategy. And I think people don't really realize that that actually takes a long time. And as I said, whenever I'm in the paper or whatever, giving out about whatever policy or whatever's been implemented or asking for more access and things like that, like, that's the headline. But underneath it, there's so much other work. And I think people are very quick to be like, Joanne, you're great for talking about access for all. But I'm like, yeah, yeah, why don't you just help me and, like, go into that office that you're working in and just tell them about inclusivity and diversity and things like
rather
that.
Rather than compliment
instead.
Me.
Yeah, like, actually, like, come and join me here and do something about it, you know.
Yeah.
That's probably my frustration with it more than anything.
But you are a change maker. I mean, that's probably one of the defining features of your personality.
Yeah, I suppose it's interesting, like, in a way, like, I think if you, it's kind of weird, especially, like, in Ireland, because I feel like in America, America, things like this would go a tiny bit better. Because I think people in America love that whole protest, you know, up against the man, you know, kind of thing. Whereas in Ireland, and I'm guilty of it myself, we're a bit more like, oh, gosh, I don't really want to rock the boat. Yeah. And I, as I said, I'm super guilty. Like, if it's something that's way out of my expertise, I'm definitely sitting there going, oh, isn't there someone a bit better than me that can handle that?
Really, though, I don't, that doesn't strike me at all about you.
No, sometimes.
What hits me about you is an inner confidence, is a knowing, okay, I believe in this, so I'm actually not going to apologise for it. I'm just going to drive ahead. Do you question yourself?
There's definitely sometimes when I do, like, definitely, like, definitely when I, God, even when I put out an article, I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that now. You know, after like 2 days of kind of dwelling on it, like, it's in the paper by Tuesday night, I can't take it out. You know what I mean? Like, it's stuck.
Collect all the papers.
Yeah, like, I mean, what will I do? Just go up to the Irish Times office and be like, sorry, Jake, would you just mind there? But, you know, yeah, so sometimes when I write to them, I'm like, oh, it's a bit ox, you know, I don't know if I was, you know, the right person to talk about this, you know, whatever.
But we have that a lot, and something, it's a theme that comes up a lot in this podcast series, and we spoke about it very recently with Baz, imposter syndrome.
Totally.
So we all have it.
Totally.
We all have it regardless of what we do.
Totally.
We question ourselves.
Yeah. And then I see sometimes I see like people in jobs that they're not equipped to have, and they're thriving and they're succeeding, and I'm like, lad, if I could have 1% of what they have, that'd be fantastic. Like, you know, like, we all know one. Like, I think everyone's listening. Either we all know someone really famous who's doing it, or we all know someone within our own local community or local office or whatever, like, who's just kind of winging it, hoping for the best. But bizarrely, they seem to be getting all the promotions and different stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Is it like, maybe if, is it because, like, if you're a member of a minority community, like a woman, either a black person or someone with a disability, are you just more likely to question yourself because you've been so questioned for so long? By society around you? Like, I don't know if that's like an ingrained thing in you. I'm not too sure. My brother has a great thing where, like, if you're ranting to him, he'll go, and caller, what's your opinion on that? And it's so obvious because you're like, yeah, I know I'm not an expert in the situation. You know, leave me alone. But I think it's something that we definitely have to work on. And I think we've seen it in the UK and the US. That's how weird politics kind of arises, is giving a platform to someone where you're like, you know, I just need an alternative view on this. Like, sometimes a fact is a fact, and you just got to accept the fact. Like, climate change is a fact. The fact there's an illness going around and no one can control it is a fact. And I think we spend a lot of time on the phone to Sheila, you know, Knocknaheeny, talking about how she's petrified for her daughter wearing a mask because masks are known to cause cancer or something along those lines. And you're like, why? Why are you leaving this person do this? Because, you know, if you leave one person on, you know there's 100 people behind going, oh yeah, she might be actually onto something. Yeah. And then that causes fear, and then that causes, you know, moral panics, mass panics. I think we just have to be a bit more careful. And not regulate, not censor anyone. I'm not talking about anything like that. But I think we just have to be a bit more careful with the way we kind of broadcast and the way we kind of talk about things now, that we just have to ensure that if a fact is a fact, it's a fact. We don't want to hear from anyone who's able to say, well, actually, I believe that's totally wrong. Like, give me the facts and I'll argue with you, no bother. But I think we've seen it a few times, you know, where people are just left on. Like,
feels like when people are vulnerable as well, like, people are probably feeling quite vulnerable at the moment. So depending on how convincing the person is in their ear, it may sway their viewpoint on something. But as you said, you can't argue with science and with facts.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember there's a great quote in a book that I read. It was actually by a wrestler, which was really funny. And hers, obviously, because she was talking about personas and wrestling and things like that. And she was always saying, if you lead with confidence, idiots will blindly follow. And I think that's so true. If you've just got anyone who's got a bit of a swag about them, got a bit of a vibe, you'd kind of buy into it, you know what I mean? You'd be like, oh yeah. And I've been guilty of it myself, like, don't get me wrong, you know, where I see someone that I'm like, oh yeah, he'd actually be interesting enough to talk about, and then you listen, you're like, what the hell am I listening to this for? You know, like, what? You know,
it's good to question that, because I think we need to be more discerning, and we need to ask the questions and how, and really, you know, does this feel right? Well, actually, maybe I'll do my homework and see if there's any truth in this in this argument or this suggestion. And as you said, just it'll always come down to what is fact. But then there'll be people who will still debate that the fact isn't actually the fact and that it's been manipulated and we're being exploited and we're all sheep.
You're bringing out my criminology to be there. I'm
exactly.
Like,
fascinating that you did that as well. You did that in Cork.
I did in UCC, and I went over to York for a year abroad in England. So, yeah, University of York. So spent time in the Dales. So,
class.
Yeah.
Nice.
Don't ask me to do my accent.
I was just about to.
You all right, love? Every time I got on the bus, you all right, love? Yeah, I'm all right. You all right? Yeah, I'm all right.
Nailing it.
And then I go, what's the crack, boy?
Were you able to switch it up? Did anyone ever slag when you came home, though? Did you hang on to the accent at all?
My THs.
Oh, really?
I still have my THs. I still pronounce the H's. So I'd say this.
But that's
a
good thing.
These,
that's an interesting thing about Cork, because as you know, himself is from Cork. Yep. My other half is a Cork man. And there is the whole TH thing. What is it with Cork people? You struggle. Not that you struggle. Is it a refusal to do the THs?
Well, I remember when I was in York, I remember they'd be like, oh, Joanne, count a tree. And I'd go, one, two, three. And they go, shrub, bush, tree, or one, two, three. And I'm like, shrub, bush, tree. That's where we're going with this. They mocked me all the time. I remember the landlord lady that was over our apartment. She was Judith, but she's Judith to me.
Yeah,
you know. And I remember she thought I was some sort of dumbass getting a scholarship to this Russell Group University. And I'm going, Judith, Judith, over here, Judith. I don't know what it is about THs. Okay, they're difficult. Okay.
So, Joanne, is there an average day for you, or how does that look like? Because you said that, you know, early morning you try and get on the yoga mat and do some yoga. But for us who are listening to you and trying to imagine what that is like, what is it like?
So in the morning, I'm lucky I have a PA, so a personal assistant. And they're weirdly, they're like, yeah, you can't be best friends. You can't cross the friend barrier. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'd be very fresh about this. But when they're doing really personal care for you, you kind of have to cross the friend barrier, you know, eventually. You know, you're talking about like life situations and struggles and things like that. So, yeah, my PA at the minute is Gina. So she's from Dunamore. And yeah, we get on like a house on fire. Like, it's incredible. We're 32 hours of the week together. So naturally, you're going to kind of start clicking and vibing about certain things. So she gets me up. She does everything for me. So personal care, all that kind of stuff. Have breakfast. Sometimes it depends on my mood. And even she's kind of sussed that now. So she's with me 6 months now. So she's like, for the first month, she was like, yeah, I'll feed you, no bother. And then I kind of took advantage. And she kind of realized when she saw me in hotels feeding myself, she was like, oh, you can feed yourself. And I was like, yeah. Ox. You know,
love it. You just be cheeky, like,
yeah,
just like,
I was, yeah, I just kind of took the pistachio a little bit with her. So then she'll put me on the yoga mat, I'll do my thing. I'm usually on my phone checking emails and stuff like that now at this stage. You know,
that's the thing about that, right? Because obviously we were texting each other and, you know, WhatsApp voice notes, and then I didn't even cross my mind, because that's the thing with you, Joanne. I don't know what it is, but I think because you're so able and you're Joanne, it's sometimes part of my brain that switches off and I forget. Well, actually, how did she manage all that
stuff?
How
do I text you?
How did you manage all that? Because I know you can.
So
just explain it to people listening.
So I just have my phone with me. So I just basically use my left hand. So I just have like the normal basic iPhone and I use my left hand. If I have like a sleeve covering my hand, so like this, or if it's like hot or if it's cold and I'm wearing a jumper kind of vibes, I'll just stick it up here. So I have like this black chest guard up in my tray.
Yeah.
And I'll just stick it up there and I'll use either my nose or my upper lip, depending on what's functioning at that time, what's not frostbitten from being at a game. So yeah, it kind of depends on my mood kind of more than anything. But
and you're
normally,
quick. You're quick, like. It's not, it doesn't take you long.
I didn't realise when people were telling me that I was quick, I kind of thought it was polite, you know, being like, oh, you're super quick texter.
I texted, you said you were here and I texted saying 5 minutes away and straight away you were back with no problem or something. I was like, how did she text that so fast?
I honestly have no idea. I don't know. My parents, now they didn't give me a phone, don't get me wrong, but they had those like blockies when I was about three. And obviously my siblings had them as well, because there's a gap of 8 years between me and the next in line. So yeah, my mother basically threw me the blockie and she was like, have a go, see if you can text. And then I just got really competitive with my siblings. They were like, oh, how fast can you text? How fast can you text? Go on. We'll write a message. No, hi, how are you? Go on, go. And then they dial me and I just get really competitive. So yeah, that's actually how I text. And then if I'm going on the laptop, because a lot of people are curious as well about me typing on the laptop, I should say for when I eat, like to excuse poor Gina and her and my meanness towards her, normally I would have stuff that I can just pick up in my mouth. I'm like a seal. I'll just throw back, you know. Mm. Or else, you know, things will kind of sit on my left hand here. So yeah, if I have a fork, I put it between my shoulder and my cheek and I kind of manage it that way. I don't know what it is about my hand. It's like it's got a weird, must be the skin texture. It's like a stickiness to it, but things just kind of have a tendency, like, I mean, I can put my phone up there and it'll balance no bother like that. And I could do like a full turn.
Yeah, so Joanne now is just, you're just after managing to lift your phone from the kind of plate in front of you, the kind of table that's attached to the wheelchair.
And then
it's now on your shoulder.
And then
not
I can just jiggle it, you know, if I was like, okay, I need to get to the top corner. I'll just kind of jiggle it around and then use it like that. Wow. So I don't really know how that kind of came about, to be honest. I think it was Tina, the other girl born without limbs. I think I just watched her when I was younger for quite some time because she's 12 years older than me.
Yeah, let's talk about her. Tina Stark.
Yeah.
So, like, your parents heard about her when you were just a small baby. And as you said, she was 12 when you were
yeah,
a few months
born.
Old.
Yeah.
Just born. So they went over and met Tina,
yeah.
met the family. So she, I would imagine, because, you know, we were talking about it earlier on, you being inspiring. I would imagine she was an inspiration to you and certainly to your parents.
Definitely she was a precedent and a standard setter.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. Like, you know, she, like, my parents didn't know how to give me cornflakes. And they just sat with Tina for a while and just watched how Tina ate. And that's how I learned the shoulder to cheek thing and kind of so many different things. So, yeah, just kind of watching her, seeing how she did it. Now, she's a bit different to me, kind of. So with my left hand, mine kind of rounds off. Like, mine's kind of rounded, like an elbow point. Hers is a bit more pointy. So hers would be like, you know, people that have really pointy elbows.
Oh, yeah.
She's like that. She's got a really pointy tip at hers. So she can use hers to, like, hook earrings on and, you know, do different things like that. Whereas
okay.
I couldn't. It's too fat. But it's fine. It does the job. So, yeah, just small things I kind of learned off her. We're both the same in that we both have one toe. So the right side as well for both of us.
Yeah.
And I don't know what function the toe has, but it's done a lot of weird things. If I drop a fork, I'll catch it. Not catch it with my toe, but if it falls, I'll kind of try and flip it with my toe back up and I'll pick it up that way.
Wow.
Yeah, it doesn't really go very successfully.
When I was watching footage of you as a baby even, like where you're managing to get the bottle into your mouth, like it was just, you from early doors, there seemed like there was a real determination about your spirit.
Yeah, it was probably just because I knew no one was going to do it for me. Like I knew there was four siblings older than me. I knew, like, look, they're like siblings. Like, they don't care when a new baby is around. They want to mess with it. They want to throw it around the place. And they did just that when yeah. I was born. You know, it was very like, you know, Dennis used to, we were mad into WWE. So Dennis used to practice like Batista bombs, Walls Jericho's, you know, RKO's out of nowhere, you know, the Rack Attack, you know, different things like that. Like, we used to just go to town on each other, myself and Dennis. Or the other thing that he used to love, especially when I could balance, was I'd go on the top rope, Maria, aka the back of the couch. And I remember I was on the top rope and I jumped off and did a frog splash, is what it's called. So basically, you just land on your belly on the person. And I remember thinking I was like the bee's knees. I was like, whoa, WWE, sign me up. But yeah, no, they kind of weren't really in the mood to do it for me. They were always kind of busy doing their own thing anyway. So yeah, it's the thing I remember. I was younger. I think I was about two. I went over to them because I just got the chair, my first wheelchair at the time. And I went over to them and I was like, oh, can I play PlayStation? And they were like, no. Like straight away, they were like, no, only if you're good, you play PlayStation. I was like, but I'll be good. You know, like, I'll be really good, I promise. And I remember they just threw me the remote. And they were like, that's to go, that's to stop, that's to shoot someone. This is how you move your character. Go for it. And I figured it out all by myself because they
wow.
literally wouldn't let me. So I just basically used my chin and my left hand to control things. And it was the same when I got the wheelchair. I remember, like, we rocked up. I was two and they were like, Joanne Livery was drive this chair. And they were like, just show
so
her.
So what? They said that to your folks?
Yeah. Just, she'll never drive it. Like, this is
there
such
was
a
no,
waste
like,
of money.
No hope. Just like, that's, it's a fact.
This yeah. is, right. Like, she can't drive it. Like, it is what it is.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, she plays PlayStation. Like, the same thing, right? You know, and they were like, no, like PlayStation's much easier, you know, blah, blah, whatever. And I think then whatever, like the analog sticks, you know, on the remotes on a PlayStation remote, it's the same as a joystick. Duh. So my parents were like, it's the exact same as a joystick, Joanne. Like you just, same as your analog stick for your game, just move it forward and it will move. And I drove out the door and into the car and I went home.
That day?
Yeah.
Jeez,
that second.
And like, what was the reaction when they saw that? Like,
oh,
after
no
what
idea.
They said?
I was in the car.
Do you know? Yeah, of course, you were gone. You were like, good
I
luck.
Left, yeah.
Hey, see ya.
I mean, this thing goes at 10k an hour. I was gone.
Come here. You know, normally, because I'm the baby in my house, right? There's four kids. And, you know, say five in your house and a bit of a gap. 8 years, you were saying.
8 years,
is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And normally, like, with the baby, the family, sometimes they can be a little bit mollycoddled, you know,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, minded. Not in your house, by the sound of things.
They threw me into a Christmas tree because they thought I could stick. Like, they thought I could hang like a baby Jesus up on the top of the Christmas tree. They thought it'd be so cool. I obviously didn't. I fell into it.
Please tell me your parents were not there when this happened.
God knows, to be honest. I honestly, they left. I remember they left. This is what Stephen, my other brother, tells me. But they left for like a day out and Dennis and Stephen, one of them I know was a playing station, but I know Stephen was there. And Stephen said all of a sudden they heard a thump and a load of crying. And they were like, oh, should we check what that is? And they were like, no, it's finished the game. 4 hours passed and they came back and they were like, where's Joanne? And they
no.
were like, oh, I have no idea. And I had actually fallen out of the crib, rolling under it, and just fell asleep there. No one was coming for me.
Oh, Joanne.
It's perfectly fine.
Like, how old were you at the time?
I have no idea. Oh, I was obviously really young, but no one was coming for me. And they say, like, Gillian, my other sister, she was an All-Ireland runner at the time, and she was involved in everything. And she was really, she'd kind of say she was not great at the old starts, you know, so, you know, she was practicing her starts. And this was before I got the wheelchair. So my mode of transport was crawl on the ground as fast as you possibly can. And that was because my dad. So, for context, my dad used to put a sweet in the middle of the floor. He'd go on one side of the wall, I'd go on the other, and the first one to get to the sweet would win. You know? So that's how I learned to crawl. So, obviously, I was must have been in the yard or inside with Gillian or just at the door, maybe, or something along those lines. She was practicing her starts. She was running so fast she didn't see me, and sure enough, she literally funted me into the head. I probably have some other form of brain injuries long term. I don't know.
You certainly don't. You absolutely don't. So obviously, clearly, as a family, there's a huge amount of love because, you know, and I think part of that is probably the fact that your siblings didn't see as different. You're just Joanne. You're the baby of the family.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And you're great crack, and we love her to bits, but we're not gonna wrap her in cotton wool. Certainly not by the sound of things.
No.
But also that your parents weren't taking no for an answer, and they were going to help you to live the best life that you could, and you certainly are, and you are doing that now. Like, they were up against it, weren't they?
A little bit. And I think with my mom, there's like a really weird, steely, determined, shrouded in negativity. Like, she's a very, it's really funny when I say it, she's a very negative person by nature, and we're the total opposite, but we still have that steely determination. So that's the only...
What do you mean by a negative person by nature?
So, like, it's the worst scenario for everything. So Joanne's going to be born without limbs, she'll be dead. You know, Joanne is, going for a job interview. She's not going to get it. And it's not, that's just her mindset. Like, she's just wired a bit different. My dad is like myself. He's more...
Glass half full.
He's more like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Like, you know, it is what it is. Give it your best. Worst case scenario, you don't get it, but don't leave with regrets, basically, that you didn't, you know, show your best side or be your best self or anything like that. And I'm of the same mentality. I'm like,
so if your mum's mindset is negative, what would you and your dad, Joe, be? What would you describe it as?
A weird...
It's not positive, but it's...
It's probably realistic, but in a positive way. Because, you know, at the same time, we'd...
An optimistic realist.
We'd be encouraging enough to be like, yeah, go for it. Do you know, by all means, yeah. And my mom would be the same, but you know in the back of her mind, she's like, Like, myself and Stephen, we have this, like, mad joke that, like, they don't care. But I think it's a good way if they don't care. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's very, like, now, this is, like, really funny story, but, like, when Stephen announced he was engaged, we all were watching The Chase. And we all went, that's great, Stephen. But look, they're at the end of the chase now. We're just going to have to watch this, okay? So that's like the...
The Chase, as in The Chase is on. The game show.
The game show, yeah, with Bradley Walsh.
Bradley Walsh.
Yeah, super exciting, right? So...
I love, like, big family news. Like, this is excitement.
Yeah.
But, like, no... Not as important.
Yeah, and a lot of people say, and this is probably where I get... Actually, my dad would be the same. I'm very bad to show excitement, like facially. If you gave me a gift right now, you'd think for a fact I wouldn't like it. For a fact. But internally, I might be exploding with excitement. I just can't tell my face that for you, you know, I don't know what it is. Like, there's been plenty of times where it's happened where people are like, you're so active and bubbly and smiley all the time. It's so hard to read you. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, I don't know what it is. I just can't. But you know, I write with my mom. Like, I mean, straight away, if you give her something she doesn't like it, like, she'll have a scowl. Whereas my dad is a bit like myself. It's like fake, like, oh, it's lovely. Whoa. I always wanted one of these before. But our face is like blank expression. I don't know what it is about us. We're a very weird breed, the Mahonies and the Reardons, okay? It's like super bizarre. But yeah, I think myself and my dad, like, personality wise, we'd be more kind of fine tuned. Like, we're very bound by routine. We don't like change. Myself and my dad, we hate if something has changed on us within an instant. Like, if you had texted me at 1:30 and you were like, sorry, I can't make it, I would have been literally like a bull. Like,
yeah, but you would have been within your rights because you were had to travel from Mill Street, which is the guts of an hour's
no,
journey.
No, I know, but like, you know, other people, they're like, oh, that's fine, I'll just go shopping. Do you know what I mean? Like, totally fine. Like, I don't know how people can be. And I don't know, because a lot of people are like, is it just because, you know, like, if you're going out, so if I'm going out, I don't know, is it because I had to organise so much to get out? Is that why I'm annoyed? Or am I just annoyed because I just hate change, full stop? Do you know what I mean?
Like, well, I would imagine it probably is a combination. And also, you're entitled to be annoyed if, because is it I would imagine, am I making the assumption that it does take longer to get ready?
Kind of does. Like, it takes like a bit of planning, you know, like, not planning, it takes a bit, like, I have to get someone to drive me, take job done, okay, who'll be there at the house now to make sure I'm dressed and ready to go, take, you know, just kind of minor things like that.
So yeah, back to your kind of your average day, you were saying that, you know, like, you obviously can't feed yourself, but then you felt like you know, you were kind of taking the piss a little bit.
I was. I can't feed myself.
So are there set hours? So what time does she go home then? It's Gina, isn't it?
Yeah, so Gina comes, so Gina works with me 6 or 7 hours of the day, depending on my day. If I'm having like a long day, like if I was here now, she'd be here obviously a bit longer. So she comes either 9, 10 o'clock, and she'll kind of flake away then. 5, 4, 5, 6 o'clock, depending on what's kind of going on. But yeah, no, like, I'm incredibly, not lenient, because that sounds mean, but I am incredibly easygoing with her in that I know she's one of those PAs that'll show up on time every time when she's due to turn up. So I make sure then that she gets, like, extra time off, or if I'm going on a trip, she's the one who's taken. We do have good times together. We've stayed in Adair Manor. We've stayed in Castle Martyr. We've gone surfing together in Lahinch. You know, we've done, like, loads of kind of cool things that I'm sure this is a normal PA life, you know, and I know she hates being called a PA because she's like, I feel like those people that celebrities give out to, you know, she's like, I'm not one of those. And yeah, no, it's, we have a good relationship, but you have to have a good relationship with who is effectively, and this is TMI, but effectively wiping your bottom. Effectively, like, at the end of the day, like, it's even like a baby. Like, if a baby doesn't get on with their mother or father or whatever, like, you can tell. Yeah. Like, they're uncomfortable, they're awkward, you know, they're kicking out, they're crying, you know, it's the same thing. Like, you need, there's an innocence and a dependency, I think, that a lot of people don't have. Like, I know a couple of friends of mine would, like, they'd always describe me as 100% independent, but really dependent. Because I'm really dependent on someone being there at all times, no matter what situation is. But at the same time, I'm too independent to be like, oh, yeah, it's fine. Pick me up at 5. Yeah, it's totally fine. You know, but sure, there's part of me that's like, oh, shit, what if I have to get on the bus by myself? Oh, shit, what if I have to do this? You know, oh, God. Do you know, what if, you know, I'm like a stickler, like, if we're going out, and I'm like, okay, where are we going? We're going here. And if someone decides halfway through, do you know what? Actually, we'll just tip over there now for a while. I'm like, dude, can I get there? Like, we have to think about these things, you know? Yeah. So that's why a part of me is like, not secretly loving the whole COVID lifestyle. I don't love it. But a part of me is loving the fact that now everyone has to plan their nights out, or everyone has to plan and shop and change, you know, just because something might happen. I'm like, yeah, welcome to my life. You know, this is 24/7 for me, like 24 years of my life all the time.
Again, another word that would jump into my mind when I think of you is how independent your spirit is, and how you know, you have a very good sense of yourself and all that. But as you said, then the other side of it is the dependency on another human that will be there. So when it came to Gina, did you like audition people? How does that work?
Yeah, so you basically interview them. Like, it's really weird. Like, in, so York,
because you have to get on, you're going to be spending so much time together. Yeah,
York was probably the first time where I had people with me 24 hours that weren't my parents, like, for 7 days a week. Because obviously I lived September to December, not independently. I lived with 6 other girls and a PA, so they were changing constantly all the time. And York, so I was 20.
But for anyone at the age of 20, you're living away from home is a massive, massive deal. Mm. Like, it's massive.
Yeah.
You're so young. Like, you're still so young. But, like, Jesus, 20. And how are your parents with that? How do they manage? Were they okay?
Oh, we literally just got off the bus. We're like, bye. see you later. And then that was it. They flew home. That was really it. But I think, like, not in a bad way. I think if, like, one, we're not anything for dramatics and emotions.
That must be a Cork thing.
Like,
big difference between my home and Damien's. We laugh about it.
But then, I was going to say, but then, I know, like,
we do long goodbyes in Connemara.
I know my brother's wife is very, like, text me. Like, text me straight away. You know, like, honestly, if you're ever in need, it's fine. Don't worry. Like, I'll change. And you're like, Marie, it's fine. Like, just leave me alone, Emery. Thanks, bye. Whereas my parents are like, yeah, okay, bye. You know, that was really it. Like, they knew I was coming back in December. And then I basically surprised my dad with Man City and Barcelona tickets. So he flew back in the middle of October. So he was happy out. I mean, he was like, this class, Joanne. Straight out, this class. Pure days on. But yeah, no, it was completely fine. I think for the first 2 months, I was incredibly homesick.
Yeah.
And it was when Club G had started up as well. So I missed that quite a bit. And I think I saw... Do you know when you move away, you're kind of making new friends. Everything's a bit awkward anyways. You know, so for... I lived with two Chinese girls, Suki and E, and then three English girls, Aisha, Amy and Jess. Now, me and Suki and E were the three first to kind of go into the apartment first. And I got along pretty okay with them because I think we were both like, oh, it's a bit awkward and away from home. You know, wow, like things are so crazy. I remember Aisha and Amy and Jess came in and the first 2 months, they had me down. Me, the Irish person who... English was our first language anyways. They had me down as the mysterious international student, not Sukini. And I thought that was the weirdest thing of all time. I was like, I don't... But it was weird, like, as I said to them, like, I didn't know which... Not which Joanne, but I didn't know which Joanne they wanted to know. You know, like, I just gave them Joanne that I am at home, I study criminology, I want to be a sports reporter. I just gave them that Joanne. It was only when I actually had to go to Russia for a film festival at No Limits, No Limits... then they realized something was up. They were like, this isn't who she says she is, like a sports reporter, but she's in Moscow at a film festival. You know, like, what's going on here? And then when I came back, I actually went straight to bed, but I got up the following morning and one of the girls came in and she was like, she's like, this is going to sound really weird, but she's like, I listened to 2FM quite a bit. And I was like, I'm sure you do, kind of in my head. She was like, no, I do. She's like, I love like Irish music. So she's like, sometimes I tune into 2FM. She's like, I'm pretty sure I heard you on 2FM. I was like, oh, yeah, that's me. Like, that's Joanne. And then I had to, like, fess up and be like, oh, I do all these, like, weird kind of cool things that other people kind of don't get to do. And then they just really didn't care after that. That was really it. Once that conversation was had, then they just didn't really care. They were like, whatever, now we know why she's being so mysterious because she hadn't a clue what was going on, basically. Mm. You know, how to describe who she was. But, like, it's intimidating, like, I think. For anyone, like, because you don't want to be known as, oh, the girl with no limbs living in the apartment. You don't want to be known as the mysterious international student, as I was for the first 2 months. You just want to be known as Joanne, and you just kind of want them to know your kind of personality and your likes and dislikes and interests and hobbies and things like that. And I think it was only until Halloween when I came into the kitchen, I was like, who's dressing up? And they were all like, dress up. I was like, you got to dress up. I was like... This is like the most important thing. Like, of course you got to dress up. They're like, you're 19. You're like, you're 20. I was like, I know, but you still got to dress up. And I dressed up as a fantasy footballer. I got a wizard hat, a Cork jersey, and a wizard cape and a wand. And I was like, I'm a fantasy footballer. And they were like, oh, so you take Halloween very seriously. And it was only until then we all kind of opened up. We're all like, oh yeah, fair enough. You know, this is what the crack was. You know, that was the other thing. They didn't get what crack was.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Brilliant. We all have so many different sides to our personality. And depending on the situation we're in or what we're doing, we kind of show a certain side of ourselves to people, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And that was weird for me in York. Like, the only time they heard my full proper accent was on the phone. You know, how's it going, boy? Like, straight away. You know, other than that, it was very, like, a PC, easy to understand, pronouncing my THs. My public speaking voice, as I call it. That was the only kind of Joanne that they kind of known. And then just bit by bit, obviously, just started to kind of chip away. And then it was just like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, go ahead.
How many different hats do you have in terms of your personality? Do you know what I mean? For me, I know that I can alter. Not that it's not a lack of sincerity or a lack of authenticity, but I just think there are versions of yourself that are more suited to certain situations.
Yeah.
So I'm not the same person I am, as you just said, like when you're on the phone to your folks at home. But like when I'm home in Spittle with my family, we do a lot of kind of nonsense talk because that's what we do in our house. But that's a version of me that a lot of people don't see, you know, versus, you know, whatever. It depends on the people you're with, the situation you're with. Have you developed a certain kind of Joanne public persona?
Sort, like if you were to ask the team that I train, they'd say Joanne's a psycho. Like, she's the scariest person we've ever met. Like, it's Roy Keane without limbs is what they describe me as. No bother. Like, and they'd happily call me that. Yeah, public. Yeah, I think there definitely is a public persona, Joanne.
Just that you're naturally really funny because you're really smart and you're very naturally witty. But do you use humour as a protection sometimes?
Maybe. And I think probably just for everything kind of in general. Like, I know if something really, not something really traumatic, like, you know, an accident or anything like that. But, you know, not that I've ever really been through it. I suppose when you're like 18, 19, 20, like, it's a bit different. But like when you're through like that weird, like, oh, a boy doesn't like me. You know, you kind of use humour to kind of get through. Well, I would anyways use humour to get through it. I'd be like, oh, sure, look at your one. Sure, you know, she clearly works out five times a week, you know, kind of vibes. You know, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like, it probably is a defence mechanism as well, just to, but it's not that I've anything underneath, you know, that I don't want to reveal so much. Like,
no, and it's not me wanting to grill you. It was just sometimes, and I completely connect with that. I know when I was sick and I had cancer years ago.
Yeah.
Humor was an absolute. It was like the go-to tool in the arsenal.
Yeah.
To get me through a shit time, because it was hard. I didn't really want to talk about it much, and when I did, then I joke about it, and maybe in bad taste, but that was my coping.
Yeah, and I definitely would agree with that. Like, I remember after my back operation, I was supposed to. Again, this is brothers leaving me out of things. All these stories are my brothers leaving me out. But Denny and Dennis, my two eldest brothers, they were going to the Euros in Poland, and they'd booked like this whole like camping thing. They were having a whale of a time. They got like an accessible like RV kind of setup kind of thing going on to go to games. So I was supposed to go, and I got called in for the back operation. I remember my parents at the door. Denny came back. They were like, "Now just pretend you had a bad time. Like, you didn't have a great time in Poland. It was really bad. You know, Ireland were terrible. That's all you have to say." Then Danny's like, yeah, great. So then Danny came into me and I was laying there. I was like, hi. And then he was like, lad, you fucking missed out big time. It was gas crack. I swear to God. Oh, my God. You'll never know what myself and Dennis had to do. I was like, shut up. Like, just actually shut up for 5 minutes. So I always, like, remember, like, the back operation was the time I didn't get to go to the Euros because my brothers were too insensitive, you know, to just keep going with their trip.
I wanted to talk to you about something a bit more serious as well, which is a topic that I just felt if there was anyone I was going to talk to about this, I thought it would be you. And it was something that I felt a little bit of myself when I was sick, and I felt how fucking damaging it was. Mm-hmm. And the word is pity.
Oh, God. Yeah, pity is the worst, isn't it?
Mm.
It's dreadful.
The reason I want to talk about it is that maybe people listening, and it's not about saying you're bad, because I think oftentimes people's intention is good, but they don't realise that actually maybe they're making the person who's going through something, whatever that thing is.
But it's worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's just like a religious thing. I hate when people offer me their prayers. I'm like, I'm good, man. Like, there's a lot of people going through a lot of tough times. Offer them your prayers, no problem. But I'm good. Like, I'm G. And I know it's from a good place because, you know, my mother would be of the same, like, maybe the same as your mother. She'd be the same. She'd think it's a really nice thing that people are offering prayers.
Getcha.
I personally don't get it. I think they should be reserved for people either who have passed on or people who are going through incredibly hard times and need an extra just shoulder from above, whether you believe in that, to just carry them through or something. But at that, I'm like, don't offer to me because I'm perfectly fine, thanks.
And is it a feeling that what the undercurrent of that statement is that because I think you need it?
Well, I think it's the stereotype that comes from like either being sick, having a disability, acquiring something, or being a certain group that people don't understand. I think that's probably where it comes from.
It's a lack of understanding.
And I think, as you were saying, the intention is good, and like, I'm happy enough with the intention. I just smile and I'm like, great, you know, that's all I say. But I think, you know, another Paralympic athlete, we were talking about it. It's like a weird microaggression, because it's like, now it's not that people are like yelling at you, I'm going to say prayers for you. But it's like this weird thing that they feel your life is so poor just because you have no limbs or whatever, you need an extra helping hand. And I'm like, dude, I'm good, honestly. If I'm going for a job interview, I'll hit you up, though. You can light that candle, no problem, you know, because I don't mind things like that if I'm going for something or I'm waiting for the results of something. But just walking down the street with my shopping from Argos, I don't think I need your prayers. Like, I can get to the car, no bother, thanks. You know, that's my kind of vibe. But yeah, I can kind of understand it, but I feel it comes from a place of not knowing what to say because you haven't encountered it every day. And God knows, if I saw someone with no limbs going down the street and I was in someone else's position, I'd be just as inquisitive. But I think I'm just an inquisitive person by nature, which is why I love hanging out with like other journalists, because I think they just ask it. And I think that's much better. Just ask it rather than kind of going, oh, I don't know where to put the plate here or there or where will I, oh, what will I do? And you're just like, just put on three, thanks, Grant.
Yeah, you know,
I'll manage, you know. But yeah, I think it's...
Because that awkwardness makes it worse anyway. Are you not better off just sometimes, you know...
Just saying it. And I always, like, now when I'm in a restaurant or even at an event now, so more than ever, like if I get a, I don't know, let's pretend it's chicken, like a roast chicken that's up for the day. Now I'm much more fine-tuned to going, and when you cut that up for me, thanks, no bother. Just because at least then when everyone's getting their meal, my dad, PA, mom, whoever I'm with, doesn't have to turn over and be like, cut, cut, cut.
Sure.
Cut, cut, cut. You know what I mean? We do have one of those like really minor stories when I was at an event. And currently took Micheál Martin offered to cut my meat for me.
Did he?
And I let him. And I call him my second dad because of it. I'm like, thanks, Dad.
Is it true, though, he has been good to you, like? Is it true that Micheál Martin did step in and make things happen?
Yeah, he was the first person my parents went to for personal assistance in preschool. Like, these didn't exist. Like, I what age is your small fella? Like,
3.
Yeah, so he's preschool age, right?
Yeah.
So... Yeah, these people, like PAs didn't exist. You just either kept them at home or hoped they went and survived independently. So my parents went up to his office here in Cork and they thought nothing because they thought he wasn't interested, wasn't bothered. But from what I've learned from him since is just that he is more of a listener and a thinker and he'll dissolve it and then he'll come back with a statement. So when they left his office, they were like, no hope of that happening whatsoever. And he was Minister for Health. And I'd say about a week and a half later, he wrote them a letter saying, got the grant. If you can find someone now, that would be great. Or else someone can be supplied. And my mom knew someone who just left college like late in life. And she went to her and she was like, look, are you interested in looking after Joanne? And I was with her for 6 years of, say, I was with her 3 until 12, till the end of primary school. And it's just kind of funny like how bizarre kind of things like that kind of do happen. But no, I've seen him around at like obviously a couple of other things, and we always kind of sit together. And then I got friendly with his son in UCC.
The son we keep hearing about.
We were at a UCC game and there was a guy on a scholarship program with me playing, and I said to him, I was like, oh look, we're doing this thing in UCC where we're just asking players to, it was like, do things for a wheelchair user for a day. I was like, do you mind if you and some of the team get involved? And he was like, oh, yeah, no bother. He was like, I'll ask a few of the lads. He was like, I'll ask the attractive ones for you, no bother, because they'll get the views for you. We're kind of making a joke of it. I was like, yeah, grand. And so about 2 days later, I was like, we're going doing it now on the marriage, like, if you're free. And then he was like, yeah. He's like, I'll get the lads. So he brought down the lads and he was like, this is, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is Micheál Martin. I was like, oh, that's Micheál Martin. I was like, interesting. I was like, hi. And then he was like, yeah, I'm actually, you know, my dad. I was like, oh, your dad's the TD, right? And we were just kind of standing talking about that for ages. And I remember we left and I was interviewing another hockey girl. She was going to do wheelchair hockey for us. And he literally just happened to walk past and he went, Joanne, was that video okay for you? And I was like, oh, it was perfect, Micheál, don't worry. And next thing, the girl went, who's a really hot dude?
Yeah.
And I was like, you'll never guess who that is. But no, he's dead sound. And every time I see Micheál, I was like, oh, it's Micheál Jr. And I think everyone's like, how on earth is this actually like work? Yeah, no, sometimes I see him around town. I'm like, sup.
Because politics and you have kind of intersected a good few times. I mean, there is that thing about the interaction you had with Enda Kenny, and he made the promise to you that he wasn't going to, you know, if he got back into power, he wouldn't cut the disability allowance. And then he got into power.
Yeah.
The cut was made. And thankfully, there was a recording of that interaction between you and you fought the case. And so you are, I mean, you are the ultimate change maker, really. And you're 24 now and look what you've already achieved in your lifetime. And there's a long road ahead.
I was going to say, but yeah, I don't feel that at all. Like, I feel like there's more. No. So I obviously, maybe it's because I've changed fields. I don't know. But I definitely am a bit more competitive now in that I haven't achieved enough.
You mentioned prayers there and the comment that, you know, somebody would come up and say, you know, I'm going to pray for you, whatever it is. And it just made me think of the episode of The Meaning of Life that you did with the late Gay Byrne. And it's an interesting concept of a programme because it's kind of stuff I'm into as well. And I always find it really refreshing when you get the different viewpoints. But just on that, on what you believe in, what you're into, you know, all that kind of stuff, because I did hear, you know, and remembering that episode and thinking about, you said, like, you know, you would have gone to mass when you were a kid.
Yep.
I get the feeling you don't anymore.
No, I still do the Christmas Mass out of Catholic guilt. Because the mother still forces, she's like, you gotta go to Mass. And I'm like, oh, it's the Father Ted episode. She's like, no, you gotta go to Mass. I'm like, it's the same thing. So yeah, we're still at that crossroad. I still haven't actually managed to get out of that yet. It's weird. I definitely would feel that either there's a greater power in that I feel like some people have life. So basically, if things don't go well for me, I'm like, something better is going to come down the line. That's my approach to it, if that makes sense.
Great.
So I don't know if that's like a higher power or if that's associated with Catholic teaching or anything like that, or that there's a plan for me or anything like that. I just would be that kind of a person anyways. Like, what's not meant for you? You know, if it's meant to be, it's up to me kind of vibes. And yeah, if it's not meant to be, you know, what's meant for you won't pass you kind of vibes.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, I'm also one of those people that does believe in like kind of karma and full circle, you know, and things like that. So like for me, if someone crossed me, it's kind of rare, but if something was to, you know, if I met someone and they were just a bad person, like in my head, I'm like, I'll just be nice to them because, you know, something's coming around the corner. Like, I'd be of that opinion as well. But I do somewhat believe, I don't believe there's someone up there like a master puppeteer, like with us all, like, you know, this is all happening. Like, things happen. I think that's it. But I definitely think that everyone does have like a pre-planned path kind of for them, and that some like things are meant for people at that time. Just sometimes you might know like the answer yet, you know, like it's, and it's kind of hard to justify when you see, as you know yourself, like if you get sick or if you see family members get sick or anything like that, it's very hard to justify.
Yeah.
What's meant, if it's meant to be.
You know, that's a tough pill to swallow, like, in those times. Yeah, I hear you.
Like, don't get me, like there are some times where I look in the mirror, and especially when I was younger and I wanted to kick a football with the rest of my peers and I couldn't. And I was very like, well, why is this meant for me? That kind of vibe.
Yeah, did you ask yourself those questions? The why?
Couple of times. Like, you know, but then, and I don't know, maybe it's just because like this is the nature of sport that everything's so focused on the athlete all the time, maybe rightly so. But it took a long time for me to figure out that, okay, I have no limbs, I can't play sport, but I can play a role in sport, and I can play a role in telling people's stories, be it the athlete or anyone kind of off the pitch, who people who aren't really that interested in, you know, maybe like referees or people who cut the grass, you know, or things like that. Because often, like, I'm not going to lie, I've interviewed loads of athletes. They are boring people. And I mean that.
What?
I mean that in the most respectful way. Like, they're just,
as in, they're eating clean, they're living good lives.
They're just really like, for, you know, I think what it is,
they're just really boring.
I think for a lot of the pro athletes is that they're so protected by their club to perform
right
for that 90 minutes or train or whatever, that the rest of their life is so mediocre, boring. Like, if anyone's watching the Spurs documentary at the minute, they're just eating a lot of the time and talking about, like, how do you put your toothpaste on in the morning? Right, that's a riveting conversation for a footballer. And I know, because I've been a part of that awkwardness as well.
Is it because we've gone down the road of those, you know, they're all with the heart monitors now, and everything is they're tapped into, obviously, the advancements of technology, but is it because now we're almost analysing the physical form a bit too much?
I think maybe it's because we're analysing them too much. And I think what I mean by that is, we've put them on such a platform that they just want to play football, that a lot of the time they know what they say is going to be interpreted, misinterpreted or whatever. So a lot of the time they are actually closed off. But I do think a lot of the time in a pro athlete case, a lot of the time the club will close it off for them and make their life so kind of meaningful in terms of football is your life.
Yeah.
Don't mess it up. You have a very short career kind of vibes. That's their meaning of life, for want of better terms. So therefore, the rest of the stuff that's going on, like, it's quite rare you'd meet a footballer with like political opinions. And I'd say a lot of them have it. I think they're just afraid to kind of say it. So a lot of the time, like, I'm guilty of it. You get way more enthusiasm asking the fellow who cuts the grass how his 9-to-5 goes. And that's because it's his life.
I'd love to talk to you about technology and where we're at now, because obviously in the last few months, it feels like, you know, the future has arrived. It's accelerated for all of us because everything has moved online. We're all virtually having meetings and events.
Yeah.
And for those of us, I'm putting my hand up as one of the people who's not brilliant at the tech side of things, but I feel like we have to embrace it. So for you, obviously, technology plays a massive part in your day to day. What does the future look like for you? What are you looking at? Are there any advancements that will enrich your life?
I actually think, even with kind of the COVID situation, it's kind of shown up a lot of things in a way of like access and things like that. You know, so for me, a lot of time I'd be spending my time going into companies talking about access, diversity and inclusion in the workforce. And a lot of time they wouldn't have a clue, not in a bad way, of what that meant. So they think it's putting in a wheelchair toilet, hiring a person with a disability, a pretty mild one normally, and just saying, cool, that's a box ticked. Some companies, you know, not all, I shouldn't really generalise, but I think now we're seeing, one, how workforce is changing and access into the workforce. And what I mean by that is we don't have to drive up to Dublin every day to go into an office to sit down for whatever, 8 hours a day, whatever it is. And I think we're seeing kind of now more than ever that it's actually, it's not the kind of whizzes on the computer who can sort things out for you in 2.5 seconds. It's actually the people who are making people happy at the minute are the creative people. So like the likes of us as journalists or us as broadcasters or athletes or singers or musicians, whatever it is. It's a lot of those fields that have been disregarded and people have like faked uninterest in for quite some time. They're now kind of realizing how important all those industries are. And I think what that shows is that for a long time, we're so obsessed with putting people in a box, a suit and tie on them, whatever it is, to shove them into an office to progress everyday society. We've forgotten to let a creative side explore. And I think that's where a lot of certain people with disabilities are forgotten. And I think a lot of the time, they're forgotten because of physical access, because they literally can't get in the door. Now with COVID, it's just turn on your computer and that's it. So I think there's huge like advancements kind of for time to come. And I think whenever there's a global pandemic, things change. You know, like we saw, like New York was built after like a massive flooding and fire and brimstone and all that. Like that's the apparent rumor. And you see what New York is today. So I don't see why things like that can't happen on, say, the west kind of side of Ireland away from Dublin. Like I think we've kind of learned now that things aren't very Dublin centric. And I think when I go to Dublin anyways, everything is very clean, everything's very easy for me to do. But it's only when I come either to Cork or Mill Street or even, and I'm not like targeting Galway, but you might know yourself, like there's a lot of places, even with a buggy, you can't really get into.
Yeah.
Like it's weird, you know, and you think, you know, you're kind of hoping during like a massive pandemic like this that things like that will be rethought of. So for me, it is basic access, but then the technology side of it, it's definitely growing. Like I'd love, and my dad is like, no, but I'd love to drive one day. And my dad is like, no, you know, because he's like, you'll crash, you'll kill someone.
Because you're a speed junkie.
Yeah, his dad was like, if you kill yourself, whatever, you know, because, you know, at least, you know, we only have one person, not a lawsuit coming in the door the following day. But I think driverless cars and things like that are really interesting. Like, I'd love to get involved in that. Like, I'm not really interested in, like, bionics and, like, putting the Elon Musk chip in my brain or attaching limbs to myself for no apparent reason. I'm more interested in adapting the environment around me to see how I can tailor it for my needs. And I think technology is so important kind of for that. And I think we're beginning to kind of notice a shape shift in kind of the way we think now, especially with COVID, is that we now have to look for things to adapt our needs in our society rather than put a one size fits all and hope everyone fits in. And if you don't, you don't. That's it. Tough.
Last question, I promise. What's on the wish list to do, to achieve, to, you know, stuff to enjoy and look forward to?
I think for me, at the minute, I'm kind of venturing into seeing if I could do a series on sport and disability at the minute. That's something I'd definitely love to get, you know, people interested in and kind of see what it's like. I definitely think that would be good. And I think my wish list for the time being, it's quite airy-fairy. I'm one of those people, I can go from A to Z, but don't ask me my B, C, D or my steps, how I'm going to get there. I'll figure it out along the way is my mantra. But I'd definitely like to be somewhat of an esteemed journalist and broadcaster like yourself and just maybe just get the opportunity to tell other people's stories, because I'm sick of my own story now.
But you're like, already doing it.
I'd like to, you know,
do it more.
I'd like to, you know, just
like a late kind of gig.
Yeah, but less late-latey, you know what I mean? Like less pressure of a late-late, you know, like still kind of my own creative. I think maybe just because I've seen it now more than ever, and maybe it's just because I talk to you, you know, I talk to other people who are like in the business and they're obviously giving me their life lessons. And they're like, oh, just have a little bit of creative control. Like, don't let anyone tell you what you can and can't do. And I think maybe I'm learning like bits from them as well, that I'm showing at 24 that other people maybe are showing at like 42. Like sometimes I'd ring my editor with an idea and he'd be like, I'll think about it. And I'd ring him and I'm like, no, we actually have to do this. Sometimes I might be wrong, you know, but I'm like, no, we'll do it. I was like, if it's wrong, look, put the blame on me. Like, it's absolutely fine. But I'm like, you know, we have to do this. And I think that's something that I definitely want to do, like, definitely kind of for the future. You know, I'd love to do more sports stuff just because it is my passion and it's what I get excited about. I wouldn't like to be in a box where I just interview disabled people all day. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But what I mean is just I'd like to vary it up every once in a while.
On a personal level?
On a personal level, I honestly have no idea. I'd obviously love to win the lotto and have houses across the board. Don't get me wrong. But I'd definitely love to move out of home, live as independently as I possibly can for me, and just kind of be my own person, I suppose, more than anything, and just carve Joanna Reardon, the sports writer identity, out for as much as I can, especially because it's a passion of mine and it's something I really do enjoy, and I hope other people enjoy it with me, you know what I mean? And if people aren't enjoying it, I'll just go back to, I don't know, campaigning or something. I'll figure it out. But yeah, no, I just kind of hope that it's a journey. Hopefully people will join me in and enjoy. And for me, I hope to make sport more accessible, both literally and physically, for anyone who is interested. That would be my hope.
Well, I think, I mean, I'm just sitting here in amazement and loving everything you've said for the past however long we've been chatting. And I've loved following what you've done. So I'm going to continue to be excited about what you go on to do. Joanne, brilliant. Look, I have loads more that I'd love to talk to you about. So I think once we press pause on the recording, I can ask you all the other questions or try and cram them in. But come here. Thank you so much for your time today. This has been brilliant. I'm so glad that we made this happen the way we did today. So I'm so grateful
to you. It was meant to be, Sheila.
Totally meant to be.
Meant to be.
Thanks so much for listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations, and I hoped you loved this chat as much as I did. Joanne is by far one of the coolest and most interesting people I have ever met, and I learned a lot from her during our chat. Please let me know what you think by leaving a comment or rating, and if you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, why not click on the follow button now? This episode is brought to you by Revive Active, your daily super supplement made here in Ireland.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.